Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. Very recently, The Lorry is partnering with MicroLeap to provide Sharia peer-to-peer financing. The Sharia-compliant P2P financing platform, MicroLeap, has announced a strategic and multifaceted partnership with The Lorry, a leading Malaysian logistics tech platform. There's a lot that can be unpacked from this. And of course, joining us on the line is Tunku Danny Nasaifuddin Muzaffar, the founder and CEO of MicroLeap. Tunku Danny, how are you?
I'm good. Assalamualaikum.
Waalaikumsalam. Let's talk a little bit more about the partnership with The Lorry and MicroLeap.
Yeah, so as you said earlier, The Lorry is a homegrown logistics tech company that's done well from where it was in the beginning to where they are now, to the leading platform provider in their space. So it was a perfect fit for us to help finance their funding requirements. But of course, giving the opportunity for our investors to invest or lend into a strong company such as The Lorry in a ethical and Sharia compliant manner. So it was a good win-win for everyone.
And of course, this is not just the first partnership or the only partnership that you guys have. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the partnerships that MicroLeap has been doing.
Yeah, so one of the biggest partnerships we've had is actually with SME Corp. So SME Corp was looking for an operator that could distribute funds to SMEs that have been hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic. So they chose our Sharia compliant platform so that they have actually dispersed 10 million ringgit through our platform to affected SMEs that could get very good financing that is done online, including repayments and application. They don't have to come to us or to a branch to set up the financing on our platform. Everything is done online. So these are the kind of strategic partnerships that we really want to push forward, especially with government-linked companies. This public-private partnership, I think, is the way that we can really assist and grow many SMEs in Malaysia.
What would be some of the ideas that you can share with us? I don't know how much you can share, but some of the ideas that you can share with us in terms of the upcoming partnerships that you're working with, or at least some sectors that you're looking into, maybe to give a good idea of where you're heading.
Yeah, so for us, it's important that one, we reach out to the micro and small medium enterprises that may not be covered by traditional banks. So P2P financing or peer-to-peer financing is always an alternative financing space. So if many MSMEs find it difficult to get bank loans, they can go to the P2P financing companies such as ourselves that are regulated and licensed by the Securities Commission. So one of the things that we are looking for now is to finance the agri-tech sector. So I think the government has seen that food security is key and for Malaysia to grow as a country. And under a specific program together with the Securities Commission, there's specific financing available for the agricultural sector. So soon we'll be launching a partnership with Bank Pembangunan Malaysia Berhad or Development Bank of Malaysia, where we will finance agri-tech farmers for financing amounts of 20,000 ringgit to 50,000 ringgit for them to purchase these kind of IoT or Internet of Things type agri-tech technology for them to really grow their yield and improve food security for the nation.
There's a lot more that I want to talk to you about, but we'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with MicroLeap Malaysia. Welcome back. This is Notepad. I have with me on the line Tunku Danny Nasaifuddin Muzaffar, the founder and CEO of MicroLeap. Danny, let's talk a little bit more about MicroLeap itself. There is a clear aim and role that Microleap plays here as being the first peer-to-peer operator in Malaysia that offers both conventional and Islamic financing. Talk to us through the idea of why you're offering both platforms, and more importantly, the story behind it, at least the operational aspect of it. I'm sure it's not as easy as what people think it is.
Yes, so the reason that we do both financing, both Sharia compliant and conventional, is that we don't want to leave anyone behind. For us, I think financing is available to everyone. So so what we say we do both, in terms of what we finance, is about 99% Sharia compliant financing. So the reason is we see that there's a gap in the market in terms of Islamic assets. So a lot of our investors or lenders on our platform are hungry for Sharia compliant assets, especially Sharia compliant retail assets. Obviously there is Sharia compliant bonds or sukuk they're called, but that's mostly for high net worth individuals and big corporations. But in terms of Sharia compliant assets for the retail sector, there really isn't much. So what we want to find and cover that gap is providing this asset that many investors can invest in for a minimum of only 50 ringgit. So, and it helps build Malaysia's capabilities and Malaysia's number one status as a Islamic finance center. So we want to push this forward. So actually a lot of our issuers or borrowers, though they initially applied for conventional financing, when we say that they can apply, switch to Sharia compliant financing, and they are within the Sharia compliant industry that is allowable on our platform, there's actually no cost for them to switch. So Sharia compliant financing costs the same as conventional financing, so they're actually happy to switch to Sharia compliant financing. And having said that, a lot of our investors or lenders are not just Muslims. We also have Chinese investors, Indian investors, because they believe in the ethical portion of Islamic finance, because ethics and Islamic finance go hand in hand. You know, we don't finance alcohol companies, gambling companies, for example. So a lot of our non-Muslim investors like that. So they're happy to help these Sharia compliant industries grow.
One item that you mentioned just now was that there is a dearth. I'm repurposing your words, actually, that there is a lack, a dearth of retail Sharia assets. My postulation is this: even for institutional investors, they have a hard time finding Sharia assets as well. So generally speaking, the evidence and the proof of this is the lower dividend returns of EPF Sharia, for instance. This is one example. Of course, Tabung Haji is yet another. And you can probably share with us other stories of insti investors having a problem or having a tough time finding Sharia assets. That is the moral of the story here. For investors, big or small, retail or insti, anywhere in between, it's going to be a problem in growing Sharia assets. Do you think that this is going to be solvable in the future, or would investors have to bite the bullet and just think about conventional assets if they want to go long? Or is there a bigger idea here that you want to share?
Yeah, I think one of the issues I find in terms of anything that is Sharia compliant is the cost of being Sharia compliant. And these costs are normally passed on to the user or the investor. So for example, takaful versus conventional insurance. Takaful insurance is more expensive than conventional insurance. So why would someone who look at a cost basis, want to convert to a takaful insurer, unless they're just, Muslims and they want to follow the Muslim way? But for me, we have to look at the bigger picture. For the Sharia compliant and Islamic industry to really grow, we can't just target Muslim investors. We should target all investors. Why do we pigeonhole us just to Muslim investors? So the beauty of the Islamic religion is, it is ethical in nature in the way it is, and it should be open to everyone so they can see the beauty of Islam and the Muslim faith. So that is why on Microleap, we actually absorb all the Sharia compliant fees, the wakala fees, which is the agency fees, the commodity murabaha, which is used to make it our financing Sharia compliant. Microleap absorbs that cost so that there is no difference between conventional financing and Sharia compliant financing. So there is no barrier for people to choose, you know, either Sharia compliant financing or conventional. It's the same. So we always push for Sharia compliant financing because, one, it provides our investors who are looking for ethical Sharia compliant financing these assets that they can invest in. And also, we know that the industry that we are helping to grow is within a Sharia compliant industry. So as I said before, that's the win-win. So if the barriers to entry between conventional and Sharia are the same, then you should see a massive adoption of Sharia compliant financing and assets.
There is also that whole picture of how sustainable this can be done. Say, for instance, if you're subsidizing some of the cost, do you think that this is a possible sustainable business model in the long run, or are you going to still pass over some of the cost over to your clients eventually when the time is right?
No, we won't pass on the costs. We have factored those costs with us. For us, it's considered cost of running a business. So we will not pass on those costs. And it is sustainable if you manage it correctly and you allocate those costs as a cost of business.
I want to pick your brains in terms of the outlook or the trend of Sharia P2P. Do you feel that the Sharia P2P space is ever expanding, or there seems to be some saturation level that we've hit?
I think it is definitely expanding. When we first applied for our license, there was only one P2P player that was Sharia compliant. When we got our license in, we were live in October 2019, we were only the second out of 11 that is Sharia compliant. Now there are about five of us that are Sharia compliant out of 11. So you can see that other P2P players are seeing that there is a demand for Sharia compliant financing, and it is definitely growing. Added to that, you know, Malaysia is, you know, the number one Islamic fintech country in the world. And for us to keep that number one status, we do have to increase the amount of Islamic fintech players that are in the country before, you know, people like Dubai or even Singapore take over that, or even London take over the our crown.
What is the situation right now, the likelihood of these other regional financial centers overtaking us in this regard?
There is a definite risk. The reason is they have more money. And when you have more money, a lot of Islamic fintech players will be attracted to where the money is. Unfortunately, you do need money, you need funds to grow. And for big centers like London, Singapore, there is a big risk. I've always said, and I've spoken this to Securities Commission, which is our regulator, I've spoken this to several other national bodies, to really make Malaysia and keep Malaysia as the number one Islamic fintech kind of country that people want to flock to. We have to look at kind of tax incentives for Islamic fintech companies. For example, when you look at Sukuk, there's always all these tax rebates and tax incentives for issuing a global Sukuk in Malaysia. We don't have that for Islamic fintech or even for Islamic P2P financing, for example. So we have those kind of tax incentives and things that push and pull people to Malaysia. Then we can definitely keep our number one ranking for Islamic fintech.
Okay. One more break before we conclude our conversation with the CEO and founder of Microleap. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me on the line Tunku Danny Nasaifuddin Muzaffar, the founder and CEO of Microleap. Danny, maybe we just want to focus on the correlation between SMEs and Microleap's vision and mission. Because early on in the interview, you were talking about the work that you guys do in growing the micro and the SME or MSME. Maybe you could walk through us the process of how MicroLeap usually assist investors and issuers on benefiting SMEs.
So as you know, MSMEs, micro and small medium enterprises, account for about 92% of all companies in Malaysia. So that's a sizable number of companies. And so what we have always started purely on microfinancing. So your makcik in Kuala Pilah that needs 10,000 ringgit for her kedai buncit can't always go to bank to get that loan. But if you come to alternative financing players such as us, you know, it's easier, it's quicker to get the financing. The profit rate or interest rate is not as low as a bank, but for that kind of size, it is definitely affordable for these makciks in Kuala Pilah. So we give them quick access to online financing, and normally they won't be able to get it from a bank. A prime example of who we actually helped was a restaurant or a stall in Johor Bahru that sells pisang goreng. And it was a 30-year company, but they only incorporated their business formally under SSM 2 years ago. They went to all the banks. The bank said, nope, I'm sorry. You need 3 years of operations to be able to get a loan from us. So they came to us and we said, yes, you can afford this financing, hosted the investment on our platform and was funded within 2 days. And they wanted only about 15,000 ringgit. So these are kind of success stories that we are helping the real on the ground and mom and pop stores that really need financing, which is the bedrock of the companies in Malaysia. So this is how we help them grow and expand.
There's also that element of you trying to actively find or search for issuers or deals. Do you think that this is something that must be done considering that the P2P landscape in Malaysia is rather competitive, if I may say so myself? Do you feel that there is a need for you guys to continuously hunt for issuers?
Yes, I think it's always a need for us to look for issuers. We've also done one way that we grow is partnerships and referral programs. So you know, we do have our referral partners who refer issuers or borrowers onto our platform. So we do that. But yes, I think it is a good space to be in. The pie is always growing. So even though it is competitive, we are assisting the people that need the financing the most. The banks will touch the creme de la creme, right? The top tier kind of companies. We will help the ones that have slipped through the net of traditional banking, who can afford the financing, they just can't get it from a bank. So and it is a growing pie, so there is enough space for everyone to do well.
The final set of questioning would involve digital banking. You touched on a very interesting nerve just now. They can afford the loan, but they might not necessarily have the necessary documentation to prove it. Does this mean that, say, in the advent of the digital banking license that was issued to the five issuers in Malaysia or the five operators in Malaysia, things like this can be better, I guess, tracked, observed, monitored, and seen, where the ability for you to finance your loan or your financing matches the kind of documentation that needs to be present? Where do you feel the connection between digital banking license is when it comes to the transparency of financial survivability or financial viability?
I think it's great that BNM has given out these licenses, and these are big entities with lots of money. The capital requirements they need is huge. So as long as these digital banks are within the capital requirements that have been set up, they are actually targeting a lot of the kind of issuers or borrowers that P2P financing players are targeting as well, which is good. So they need to make sure that they have their credit risk checks correct, you know, so whatever methods that they are using will correctly kind of identify and measure the risk of these small companies that they are lending to. So for them, the technology has to be up to speed with what they want to do. Because right now, if having a digital license means they don't have to come to the branch to open an account. So they have to make sure that their processes in place are strong enough that, you know, you are onboarding the correct companies, the correct people, and, you know, you don't get any high non-performing loans that you may get. But having said that, you know, several digital banks in, say, for example, Australia have closed down because they did not have the processes right from the start. BNM was very clever in saying you have 1 to 2 years to get your processes right, and then we will give you your full license. So I think that's a good step by BNM in making sure that they do it properly.
Do you feel that 5 licenses is too much for a market as small as ours?
I think 5 is perfect. 3 conventional, 2 Islamic. I think that is the perfect size. I think anything more would be too much. And we'll just see how it happens. I think it's the right size.
So do you feel that MicroLeap is thinking about going into that space as well? Other than P2P, what would be some of your other plans?
We were always looking for joint ventures and collaborations and partnerships with any and all institutions, financial institutions. You know, any partnership with digital banks, we are more than happy to have a look at. And I think it is good. Obviously, you know, the difference between P2P financing and digital banking are more closely related than, say, P2P financing and traditional banking. Yeah. But I think it's a good space to be in. I think it will help give our borrowers a choice in terms of what kind of financing they want. So all in all, I think it's a good and healthy place to be in.
Thank you very much, Danny. That was Tunku Danny Nasaifuddin Muzaffar, the founder and CEO of MicroLeap. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com. Look for Notepad. You can also look for MicroLeap, one word, MICRO Leap, LEAP. And look for other resources that we have on them there. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.